Hello and welcome back to the Ear Fuel Podcast. As always, I'm Joel Freemark, and you can follow me on Twitter at @GetEarFuel and at The Daily Guru. The podcast is always available in the iTunes and Google Play stores under Ear Fuel and at GetEarFuel.com. Now, this week, I am going to be digging into the brand new, just announced nominations for the 2017 class at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. There is a ton to be excited and really, really frustrated about, and we're going to get into all that. I can't tell you how much I want to do this, but before we do that, let's cool our jets and prepare for a quick album review. The album I want to look at today is the most recent release from Shovels and Rope, and it's called Little Seeds. Now, if you don't know Shovels and Rope, they're a duo from South Carolina. I'm almost positive they're from South Carolina. And they fall somewhere between alt-country, alt-folk, and Americana. If you know the track Carolina Drama from the second Racketeers record, you kind of have a general idea of what they sound like. It's sort of that country, folkish sound, but often with darker themes. They've released a handful of records over the past decade or so, but this for me was actually their least cohesive album yet. Now, this album begins with a ton of promise, as the opening two tracks are a whole lot of fun, and they have this feeling of reckless badassedness, I guess, and you can't deny it. It's pretty great. The fuzz on the guitars, there's this stomp, but all of it is in this stripped-down country twang style, and it's just fantastic. I was really, really into this record until the third song. They hit the brakes really hard on that song, maybe actually too hard. It's just a severe jolt of the flow and the mood and the sound, and on a lot of levels, the album never recovers. It's not because they stepped away from the louder arrangements, because, you know, they kind of built their sound on the opposite, but once the next few songs roll out, the biggest problem in this album is exposed, and that is the fact that nearly every song overstays its welcome. None of these are especially long songs, but it seems that once they wander past the 3.5 minute mark, in almost every case, the song has already begun to drag. Even in the more promising moments, like the song Invisible Man, they let it meander, and what could have been a kick-ass 2 minute track just loses all of its steam and sucks out more energy from the album. The other problem is, and I really hate to say this, it's almost like they're trying too hard to be cool or country on a number of occasions. It gets to the point where it almost comes off as inauthentic, even though the duo have more than enough country and folk pedigree. But tracks like Missionary Ridge and The Last Hawk are just, I don't know, they're almost cliche. Now, I did enjoy songs like San Andreas Faultline Blues, but to be honest, by the time you get to that part of the record, there's been too much filler and you're almost bored. Much of that bored feeling has to do with the fact that these two insist on harmonizing on every word of every line of every song. While I dig the way their voices blend, they overdo it and then some, to the point that it becomes something between annoying and distracting. Much like the song lengths, they just need someone in the studio to tell them when to stop. I can't deny how much I enjoy the first two songs here, really, and I think they're more than worth checking out. But beyond that, go grab any other of their releases, as they're far more enjoyable as entire albums. Little Seeds for me, yeah, it's just a pretty big pass. Moving on. Yesterday, the fresh batch of nominees for induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame were announced, and as always, there were some surprises both in terms of who was included, as well as the annual list of people who got snubbed. There were also one or two nominees that I was pretty shocked by, and there's no doubt there's going to be a ton of discussion as these 19 candidates are narrowed down to what usually is 5 or 6 actual inductees. So let's dive right in, shall we? Actually, before we dig into the artists themselves, let's just have a quick refresher on the actual criteria that the nominating committee looks at when they create this yearly list. First off, it has to have been at least 25 years since the artist's first official release. This can be a full album, an EP, a single, it doesn't really matter, but it has to have been 25 years. So this time around, we're talking about artists who had their first release in 1992 or earlier. The other part of the criteria is far more subjective, as it basically says the musical nominee needs to have demonstrated an unquestionable musical excellence and talent, along with having had a significant impact on the development, preservation, and evolution of rock and roll. Now, how exactly Green Day qualified under those rules still escapes me, but hey, we all make mistakes, right? So, after the initial nominees are released, a group of about 600 music industry types, along with pretty much every living inductee, are allowed to vote for who they deem the most worthy. And a few years ago, the Rock Hall added a fan vote, but each year it's been largely ignored for a number of different reasons. This year's nominees are actually the least controversial in a number of years, in my opinion. So let's start by getting the easy ones out of the way, as there are some artists nominated this year that are unquestionably deserving of the honor. Joan Baez should have been in forever ago, as should Kraftwerk, the MC5, and Yes. All four pioneered different areas of music, and the list of later artists they influenced goes on forever. You can't deny their place on this list, and it's well past time all four of them were on the Rock Hall stage. Aside from those four, that's where the debate begins, as even though a number of the other nominees rank amongst my favorite bands ever, you can easily argue them off the list depending on your interpretation of the Rock Hall's mission. Really, the two nominees that jump out immediately in terms of such a debate are Tupac Shakur and Bad Brains. Many people still enjoy arguing over the value or, I don't know, correctness of having hip-hop in the Rock Hall, and while I will listen to that line of thinking now and again, I totally disagree with it. While the name suggests differently, almost since its inception, the Rock Hall has been a place that honored music across the board, from every single genre. Well, except jazz and classical and country, except once, but, but really, in the first Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction class, the very first, that was in 1986, you had Sam Cooke and James Brown, among other people, both of whom failed to fit perfectly under the strictest interpretation of the word rock and roll. Sure, they're not as far from that definition as punk rock or rap, but within the first few years, the likes of Marvin Gaye, The Supremes, The Four Seasons, and Johnny Cash were all inducted. So it's not like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is just the Beatles and Led Zeppelin and Chuck Berry, and that's really the only style of performer. It's been like that since the beginning. Another way of saying it is, get over yourself. It may be called the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but reality tells us that it's a music hall of fame. And with that in mind, it's almost impossible to argue against the impact and artistry of Tupac Shakur. He completely revolutionized both hip-hop and popular music, and was responsible for some of the most moving, deep lyrics of his generation. Also, let's look at the impact he had on culture as a whole. Whether it was helping to push rap further into the mainstream, the quotes and lines he said that are now part of the common vernacular, or just the fact that people looked to him for commentary on the state of race in America, you cannot deny his massive presence in the world of culture even after his death. Also, to be honest, Tupac was about as rock and roll as they get in terms of attitude. He did whatever he wanted and always had a middle finger ready for anybody. He partied big time, got arrested a bunch, and yeah, when you think about the outward image of rock and roll, Tupac is a perfect fit. In that same vein, Bad Brains. I mean, come on, you just can't top Bad Brains. Along with putting Washington, D.C. back on the music map, you can easily argue them as one of the most important pioneers of hardcore music. Bringing together metal and reggae and funk and hip-hop and soul and then fusing it together with the punk aesthetic, nobody, and I mean nobody, has ever made music quite like Bad Brains. I will say that I find it a bit amusing that Jane's Addiction are also nominated this year, as I think you can draw a very clear line of influence directly from Bad Brains to Jane's Addiction, and I'm just hoping the Rock Hall doesn't do another one of their famous cart before the horse situations, you know, the Stooges or the MC5 or pretty much any proto-punk band. That being said, Bad Brains are untouchable, and they are on my shortlist for voting. Shifting gears a bit, I'll go ahead and say it. There are artists on the nomination list this year that just don't measure up in comparison. It's not to say that they're bad or unworthy, but when you draw a line in the sand in terms of quality, I'm sorry. The Cars, Journey, Steppenwolf, and the Zombies just don't measure up. And again, I am a big fan of the Zombies and Steppenwolf, and the former certainly had a lasting impact, but when you compare the 19 groups to one another, these are the first four I'd drop from the list. The Cars were never anything super special to me, and musically, they never really evolved. The same goes for Steppenwolf, and while both had big hits, and a lot of them, neither are groups you hear many bands pointing to as influences. Yeah, I know, Billy Corgan loves to talk about the Cars, but that's just one band member, and yeah, they just don't make my list. Now, Journey, Well, see, Journey are a bit more difficult to argue off of the list, as if I'm not mistaken, they remain in the top 30 biggest selling acts ever. So with that in mind, it's hard to deny influence, but I don't know. I guess this one really comes down to personal taste, and my taste does not include Journey. Feel free to hit me on Twitter and argue that point. So this leaves us with 9 more acts to look at, and I think the one that's left that many people are scratching their heads about is the inclusion of Jay Giles Band. I get it. Most people think they were just some one-hit wonder in the form of the song Centerfold. However, the band actually formed in the late 1960s. Yeah, the 60s, no joke. They were originally a blues band, and they had their first major label deal in 1970. Odd, right? I mean, most people see Jay Giles Band as an 80s group, but they had a string of hits in the first half of the 70s, and, oh yeah, little trivia fact, the night that the Fillmore East closed, the Allman Brothers were the headliners and Albert King was also on the bill, but Jay Giles Band were the third act on that bill. No joke. That's how big they were at the time. They closed the Fillmore East. That's huge. Now, in terms of influence, everyone from the Black Crows to the Blasters to, well, honestly, I think George Thorogood pulls a fair amount from Jay Giles, and many have made the case that the Blues Brothers modeled some of their act after Jay Giles Band. So, yeah, don't be so quick to write them off your list, as they have far more of a resume than a lot of the other nominated acts. Obviously, this nomination list also has a trio of still relevant performers in the form of Janet Jackson, Pearl Jam, and Jane's Addiction, and I can get behind 2 of the 3 making this year's final cut. Just the other day, seriously, I'm not even kidding you, I was talking about what an exceptional trio of back-to-back-to-back albums Janet Jackson released with Control, Rhythm Nation 1814, and Janet. Not only do the hits pile up across these albums, but she reinvented herself on each album, along with having an undeniably massive impact on the state of culture. Also, Janet to me has always been more rock-centric than most others in the pop world, and she's more than deserving of an induction. So which is the other more modern act that I think deserves to be in this year? Jane's Addiction or Pearl Jam? Well, to be honest, it's actually not a tough question for me, as one of them did far more in terms of influence across music and culture as a whole. Jane's Addiction. Sorry, Pearl Jam fans. Know that I love that band, but in many ways, without Jane's, Pearl Jam doesn't actually happen. In many ways. But in a word, Lollapalooza. I know that was more Perry Farrell than it was the band as a whole, but at its inception, that was Jane's Addiction's thing, and Pearl Jam were early performers. Beyond that, musically, Jane's Addiction pushed far more boundaries and has influenced a massive swath of musicians. Getting even more granular, Dave Navarro, Eric Avery, and Stephen Perkins are 3 of the most talented musicians of their generation, and nobody has a voice quite like Perry. Jane's Addiction has absolutely everything necessary for induction into the Rock Hall, and they can be easily argued as the most deserving on this list. Not to leave Pearl Jam out or disparage them, but I just don't see them as a first ballot band compared to the rest of this list. They would have easily surpassed a number of acts inducted over the past few years, but given this year's nominations, they would be my first ones on the outside looking in. Sorry. Speaking of bands that should have been inducted over previous honorees, Chic. I mean, seriously, how the hell are they not in the Rock Hall yet? I mean, they define rhythm and blues better than damn near any other group in history, and rock is founded on that style. Countless hits from funk to disco to soul to rock, and they're a core influence on the very beginnings of rap, as well as the new wave movement and dance music in general. You know, Good Times, Dance, 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 Le Freak, I Want Your Love. The list of their iconic hits goes on forever, and everyone from Freddie Mercury to Blondie to the freaking Smiths have pointed them out as massive musical inspiration. Nile Rodgers is still a huge musical pioneer and influencer to this day, and I think this is the 11th nomination for Chic. Ugh, it is a musical crime that they are not in yet, and yes, that would be my absolute top vote. Get Chic in the Rock Hall now, damn it! Breathe. Breathe, Joel. Calm down. Breathe. Along somewhat similar lines, I do think it's about time both Joe Tex and Chaka Khan found their way onto the Rock Hall stage. They're more than deserving in terms of influence, with Joe Tex being slightly more deserving in my opinion. As I see it, if they don't get into the hall in the next year or two, they probably never will. those that remember their impact and fight for them are going to age out of the voting committee, and perhaps down the line they'll get some sort of special induction, but I think the window is closing fast on both of them, and they can both be easily argued as more than deserving. So that leaves us with two more groups, neither of which move me one way or the other: Depeche Mode and Electric Light Orchestra. It's not that I dislike either of them, and Jeff Lynne is more than musical royalty, but I don't know, neither of them really do much for me. They fall into a category where if they got into the Rock Hall, I wouldn't be offended, but if they were left out, I wouldn't make much of a case for a snub. I get why they're on the list, but I mean, I guess I nothing them. Whew, okay, 19 acts, but we're not done, because let's be honest, there are a ton of acts that got snubbed this year, with Motorhead, Nine Inch Nails, and the Pixies at the top of that list, and oh yeah, did you know that Roxy Music have never been nominated either? You can't get past how much impact Motorhead continue to have on that line between hard rock and metal, and without Nine Inch Nails, you don't get the popularity of industrial music, and so much electronic music hinges on the emergence of records like Pretty Hate Machine and the brilliant Broken EP from Nine Inch Nails. Their exclusion will continue to be an embarrassing oversight by the Rock Hall, especially when they're inducting far less worthy acts like Green Day, Cheap Trick, and the Pretenders instead. But above all other snubbed bands, two stand atop what I will call Mount Overlooked, and each of these is a musical crime unto itself. First up, even though they've been eligible for more than 2 decades, Thin Lizzy have never gotten a single nomination for the Rock Hall. Zero. Find me another band anywhere in music history that sounded like Thin Lizzy or had a similar musical impact. Beyond their long list of incredible hits, they pioneered a guitar style and sound that remains to this day. I mean, the second a Thin Lizzy song comes on, there's no question of who you're listening to. They've got tone like nobody else, and their music can energize in a completely unique manner. Thin Lizzy are beyond rock legends, and the fact that they've never even gotten a nomination, it makes no sense at all. On a similar timeline, King Crimson. Yeah. King Crimson have 0 Rock Hall nominations. The band that can be argued as the most important in the history of prog rock, and 0 nominations. The band that enlisted the likes of Robert Fripp, Bill Bruford, Adrian Belew, Tony Levin, Greg Lake, and so many others, and 0 nominations. The band that everyone from Kurt Cobain and Maynard James Keenan to Bad Religion, Iron Maiden, and Rush have all pointed to as massively influential on their varying styles of music, and 0 nominations. The band responsible for 21st Century Schizoid Man and the entire Red album, and 0 nominations. Seriously, Rock Hall voters, get it together. More than 2 decades and it is far past time to give King Crimson the respect they deserve. Also, here is my yearly complaint that neither Link Wray nor Dick Dale are in the Rock Hall. The former got nominated once, but they've been largely shut out since day one of the Rock Hall. It is impossible to deny their lasting influence on, well, anyone who's ever picked up a guitar. So yeah, they've got to be on the snub list. Whew, yeah, okay. Look, we know that the Rock Hall isn't perfect. We know that. There's no artist out there who's going to see their career as a failure if they don't get into the Rock Hall. It's a completely self-indulgent evening that makes it understandable why some honorees don't want to attend. But at the same time, each year, it makes for great conversation across all of us who live and breathe music. So hit me up on Twitter at GetEarFuel and at The Daily Guru, and let me know who you think deserves to be in from this year's nominees, and of course, who you think this year's biggest snubs are. Now, before we wrap the episode, I do, of course, have your weekly EarFuel listening assignment. For those of you new to the podcast, each week I assign an album to listen to in full, beginning to end, without any distractions or interruptions. It stems from the fact that these days music has been largely relegated to a background task. You're at the gym, you're at work, you're driving, you're whatever. And this assignment is all about taking some time each week to consciously listen to music for the sake of music alone. This week, since I got a little bit too excited, and they absolutely should have been in the Rock Hall ages ago, your listening assignment is my favorite record from Thin Lizzy, 1976's Jailbreak. This album, I cannot put into words how much I love this album, but I will try. To me, Jailbreak is Thin Lizzy at their best, as they'd been sort of building to this sound with their earlier records, and on Jailbreak, everything clicks into place and you have outright rock majesty from beginning to end. I mean, you've got psychedelic, Irish folk, Americana, metal, what we now call classic rock, and so many other sounds swirling all at once here. And in the spotlight are much of what makes Thin Lizzy so great, the dual guitar assault of Scott Gorham and Brian Robertson. There's just this imposing tone on almost every song, and the interplay between these two is impossible to top. It's got crushing chords, massive anthemic hooks, and killer solos, all within a tone that you can't mistake for any other band. Like I said, the second a Thin Lizzy track comes on, there's no question of what band is playing. But you see, that's just part of the musical magic on Jailbreak, because the album is also really heavy on groove. Even the title track has this deep hook to it from Phil Lynott's bass work and the brilliant drum playing of Brian Downey. It's the way that the rhythm moves in so many different ways that really allows the guitars to shine, and all of that leads to an array of outright rock classics that refuse to age. I mean, just think of the classic riffs here. The Boys Are Back in Town, Cowboy Song, Warriors, Running Back, not to mention the title track. Each of these is iconic unto itself. And of course, you also get the voice of Phil Lynott, which captivates listeners unlike anyone else in history. There's this undeniably genuine and honest feel to his voice, and whether he's talking or singing or shouting, you have to have your fist in the air as you sing along. But you see, that's the thing. Outside of the chorus, he rarely gets into a full shout, as the lyrics are such an important part of the song. The man knows how to spin a vivid tale, and these songs are almost all about living life to the fullest in every way possible. Look, I can go on forever about what a must-own album Jailbreak is, as it gives you country and punk and hard rock, some jam, a bit of something for everyone. And I could tell you about the grinning attitude that runs across every song, or the power in the guitar, or just, I can go on forever about this record, as it's totally worthy of such reverence. The bottom line, though, everyone needs to crank up Jailbreak on a weekly basis. And if somehow this one hasn't been in your ears lately, you need to change that right now. Thank me later. So that's all for this week. Be sure to hit me up on Twitter at @GetEarFuel and @TheDailyGuru and let me know your thoughts on the Rock Hall nominees. As always, the podcast is available in the iTunes and Google Play stores under EarFuel and at GetEarFuel.com. That is your weekly EarFuel. Share and enjoy.